Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
From the great resignation to the great resurgence, the AFL-CIO on the new power of workers in America. Social media's role in organizing, it's a big one. And today on the show, the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 3283, and the Sprinkler Fitters in Chicago. Welcome to the Wednesday, April 20th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms and growing. And we're talking Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Lori Glicker is going to be our first guest on the show today. She comes to us from the American Federation of Government Employees in Cleveland, Ohio, Local 3283. And they represent the defense finance workers, and they cover a lot of the payroll applications for the federal government and the military. So we'll be talking to her about a pay increase, and apparently this is a topic that's been getting a lot of play with members of the AFGE, and that is scheduled closings of VA facilities. We've touched on this in the past couple of podcasts, and she's going to bring us up to speed on that. But there's a lot of news on the national website we're going to touch on. And one of them, we talked about this briefly 2 days ago, and this came down last week. It was a message, an executive order that came out of the White House, and it's getting attention from Everett Kelly, national president of the American Federation of Government Employees. And it was a powerful message to workers as well as employers. The Biden administration pretty much said, you have the right to join a union. Don't let anybody tell you you don't. And Mr. Kelly said, working people everywhere should have the right to join together in union and advocate for better working conditions at their place of employment without fear of retaliation or reprisal. And this White House gets it. The action by the Biden administration last week will further the federal government's goal of being a model employer by simply declaring that it will remain neutral on union organizing campaigns, will inform employees of their rights, and will process payroll dues deduction requests by employees in a timely manner. And by doing this, the White House is sending a very powerful message to employers everywhere that efforts to interfere with union elections and union rights should not be tolerated. Amen to that. How about this? Time off to vote. No American should face the choice between earning a paycheck and exercising their right to vote. But because we do not guarantee Americans time off to vote, many face that choice. That's why AFGE is supporting a pro-voting rights bill that's been introduced in the House of Representatives, to require employers to provide their workers for at least 2 hours, 2 hours of paid leave to vote in a federal election, not all elections, federal elections, making sure voting is a right and not a privilege. It'll be interesting to see how far this one goes. The bill is H.R. 7489. It was introduced by Representative Matt Cartwright out of Pennsylvania and has 36 original sponsors. You would hope it would have more than that, but this is definitely one to watch, no doubt about that. So Lori Glicker will be our first guest on the show. Later in the show, we're going to go to Chicago and check in with William Hinks, and he comes to us from the Sprinkler Fitters. Website is sprinklerfitterchicago.org. William is a vice president and an organizer, comes from a union family. His dad, his uncle, and his cousin all were active in Local 281. They're affiliated with the United Association. William writes, in my 18 years, I have never missed a single union meeting. Back in 2011, he was appointed a local 281 for their political action committee. He was elected to the executive board in 2013, re-elected in 2016, and then in 2018 was appointed as organizer, and he's currently the vice president. And this is interesting. This guy is a fighter. William slept 13 nights in the Wisconsin capital of Madison during Scott Walker's regime. Remember that back in 2011 when Scott Walker, one of the first things he did as governor of Wisconsin was to attack unions. I mean, he hated unions. And he still hates unions, even though he's not governor anymore. But he turned back the clock. And there were protests that got national attention. They tried to do it in various other states. It failed in the state of Ohio. But since that time, we have seen four, five, six states go right to work, along with Wisconsin. And Wisconsin was a very, very union-friendly state. And the current governor, a Democrat, is trying to unwind some of that, but he's not having too much success with the Republican legislature. But this guy slept 13 nights in the Capitol during those protests. We'll talk about unfair labor practices with some non-signatory organizations, Cintas Fire Protection for one. And get this, right now there's no installation license for sprinkler fitters. And I don't know if that's Chicago or the state of Illinois. And they have legislation to raise the standard for testing and inspection. They got that. But here's the crazy part. Portable fire extinguishers licensing. For portable fire extinguishers, the licensing there is more strict than for a fire sprinkler. Go figure. Go figure. When the sprinkler fitters are responsible for protecting businesses, schools, homes. I mean, come on. Come on. You want to contain a fire when it happens. Kids in school. You would expect the licensing to be the best ever, but that's not the case, and we're going to talk about it on the show. So he'll be our second guest again, William Hinks, on behalf of 281. Affiliated with the United Association. Well, the AFL-CIO is on a tear here. You've heard about the Great Resignation. A lot of people quitting their jobs saying, you know what? You're not paying me enough. Benefits suck. Got to do better. Some of those people found good jobs. Some of them did not. So the AFL-CIO did a webcast today, and they talked about how the Great Resignation is turning into the Great Resurgence. Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, led the pack. She pointed out in 2020, working people across the country quit their jobs in record numbers. 2 years later, we know that the Great Resignation was about much more than the pandemic. It was years in the making. Millions of workers are fed up with low wages, unfair working conditions, being taken granted on the job. Now, we are witnessing a great resurgence, a rebirth of worker power in a moment unlike any other in the history of the labor movement. So, today, we delved into the numbers so we can learn how we can build on the growing power that workers are demonstrating in every part of America. It's pretty significant. Got a long way to go, no doubt about that. Union density is nowhere near what it was back in the 50s and 60s, but you got to start somewhere, and the pandemic was pretty much a wake-up call. You know, we're going to address this tomorrow in a segment that we do with The Nation magazine, and we're going to profile the rank and file, especially at Starbucks and Amazon. Typically lower wage jobs where workers are really, really taking the ball and running. And it's good to see, and a lot of people are noticing. And what's interesting with a lot of the organizing today, there's very little, if any, affiliation from national unions. It's pretty much rank and file. So that'll be tomorrow, but Today, the AFL-CIO is taking a look at the whole situation and trying to figure out how they can harness that worker power. Well, one way they're doing that is through social messaging. And the New York Times did a story on this, on how social media has become a very powerful tool. The Times profiled a worker at one of Florida's Dollar General stores who began documenting her long hours and lousy working conditions on TikTok. After going viral, she was fired. Well, guess what? This woman now manages a network of hundreds of Dollar General and other retail workers who are still speaking out and is hoping to build a movement that can lead to a union. In that vein, the publication More Perfect Union reports that even though many Americans have a favorable view of Amazon, yeah, you know what? They got good prices, lots of products, so they like the company. However, a vast majority, we're talking 75%, 3 out of 4, support the Amazon Workers Union and believe it's necessary to achieve, quote, job security, better pay, and safer working conditions. In the meantime, an administrative law judge with the National Labor Relations Board has ruled that Amazon must reinstate Gerald Bryson. Gerald was fired 2 years ago after an organizing protest. This is the same Amazon warehouse where workers successfully created the first Amazon union some weeks ago. Bryson celebrated the decision as one that will show that Amazon can be beat. It'll show you have to fight for what you believe in, he said. Meanwhile, following the unions at Amazon and Starbucks, workers at Apple retail stores have also begun to organize. Many credit the increased support for workers at the labor board to bring changes brought on by Jennifer Abruzzo, the general counsel. So it's interesting, too, that the Biden administration is proposing a budget to increase NLRB funding by 15%, which is long overdue. That budget has been stagnant for years now. Well, here's an interesting story. In California, lawmakers are holding a hearing today to consider legislation that would protect job applicants from discrimination on the basis of off-work marijuana use. Yeah. Bloomberg Law explains that lawmakers are trying to fill in the gaps to protect those who use a substance that 37 states and the District of Columbia have legalized for medical use, and 18 states and the District of Columbia have legalized for recreational use. You got to do something right. If it's okay to use it, not actually getting high at work, but it's in your system. A number of states, Democrat-controlled states like New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut, have passed laws barring employers from taking adverse action against workers or applicants' recreational use. California has yet to do so. Moreover, the California Supreme Court held back in 2008 that existing anti-discrimination laws did not require employers to accommodate marijuana usage. So that should be an interesting hearing going on today in the state of California. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the American Federation of Government Employees.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, These professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, we are available on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment, good employment, I might add. ulagency.org is our website for more information. Let's go to our live line. Joining us from downtown Cleveland, Ohio, is Lori Glicker, and she's Executive Vice President for the American Federation of Government Employees. This would be Local 3283, and they represent the DFAS workers. DFAS is an acronym for Defense Finance Accounting Service. Lori Glicker, she's been on the show a number of times. How are we doing? Welcome back. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you. I'm doing wonderful. Glad to see sunshine out today after that snow for the last couple of days.
So, I'll tell you, that was nasty. I'd never seen so many accidents. Nobody was ready for that. The snow plows weren't ready for that, but that's the climate change, I guess. I don't know. Here we are in spring. I had more trouble yesterday getting to do the show than I had in the middle of winter. I mean, what does that tell you? That was amazing.
But we're Cleveland. You know, we have to be prepared. We've had snow as much as into May.
I know.
So it's like anything is possible in Cleveland.
Exactly. You got to be tough to live in northeastern Ohio. No doubt about that. So, Lori, just fill me in here. 702 members of the local, and I have to ask you, how are we? I remember there's a number of locals, you're included, that were working remotely due to the pandemic. Maybe you can update our listeners on where we are with that. And I understand there's a date in the not-too-distant future where more and more will be getting back to the office. So help me out on that, Lori.
Well, they opened up the federal building about 2 weeks ago, and so now management is looking at May 16th as our return back to date for workers who are not 100% teleworkers or who have chosen after 2 years of being at home want to start coming in 1 or 2 days a week. That's all the DFAS sites. But we are looking at May 16th as the projected start date to come back into the building for those who wish to come back into the building.
Okay, good. How's the morale been here? I know this has been a tough couple of years. I know it seems to be getting better here, especially with the union-friendly guy in the White House. You're not being attacked, but what's the latest on that, Lori?
The morale is very good. You know, some people who are used to being at home are concerned about not being able to be at home, but it looks like everything is looking great. Management is not mandating anybody to come in at this point. It's a voluntary situation, and it'll be done by case-by-case scenario, but we are looking at still probably only about 30% coming back into the building.
Now, that's going to be like that for a while, or do you see people working remotely for good? What are they saying about that?
Well, the general consensus is from all the DFAS sites, and that is that a lot of people have grown accustomed to being at home, so they may choose to work from home, and we're looking at more people will stay at home as time goes on. You know, they come into the building, they see what it's like. We have a feeling that they may want to go back home, you know, after driving downtown, especially during rush hour traffic, the parking situation. So we're hopeful that they choose to come into the building, but we're still leaning towards probably 30%. We don't see any more than 40% projected coming back into the building at all.
Now, Lori, is that up to the locals to decide? This is not like a national directive or anything from the union going to the various places that they represent. Do they figure that on, you know, on a local basis then? And who's going to work remotely, who's not?
It's your, what your job is within DFAS. If you are mission critical, where you need to be into the building to have access to certain systems or certain files and that, then they would be considered mission critical and they would be asked to come in and not be a full-time teleworker. But that depends on your position at DFAS. Mm-hmm. And what it is between the union and our council working closely with DFAS management at all five sites, we've got a wonderful working relationship where we negotiate between the union and the management to make sure that everything is being followed properly. I know the man in the house would like to see people more back to work and that to come out of this pandemic environment. So, but we've worked very closely with management and we've come to a working solution for all five sites.
That's good. It's nice to have a seat at the table, isn't it, Lori?
It is, because I am also on our council, DFAS council. And we do have a seat at the table, and management is listening to us. We're listening to management. So we have a very good, excellent working relationship.
There's the old line, if you don't have a seat at the table, then you're on the menu. And you don't want to be on the menu. No.
Absolutely not. And like I said, we both are kind of equally full of each other, so neither one is taking too big a bite out of the other one. So, like I said, we're working wonderfully.
Good, good. All right, I understand that you're working for a pay hike. And I know under the previous administration, wages were frozen. It was very difficult. You had a very, very anti-union climate in the White House. Mm-hmm. Again, that has all changed. Where are we right now? Because, there's a lot of inflation out there. And it's tough to keep up with it. And I know you've asked, there was a couple of numbers that we talked about. I'm just wondering if that's enough, considering what's going on right now. So, Lori, fill me in.
Well, last year we had like a 2.7. That included the locality and everything. This year, under the FAIR Act, House Resolution Bill 6398, we're asking for a 4.1 across the board for all federal employees with a 1% increase to the locality pay. We're just trying to come closer to the gap between private sector and public sector. We're trying, federal sector, we're trying to get closer to that pay gap. And right now, from what we are being told is the man in the White House is kind of looking at a 4.7, kind of trying to go in between the mm-hmm. two numbers. But we are hopeful that we are getting closer to that 5.1 increase is what we're hoping to kind of lessen that gap, especially with that rising cost of health care. You know, you get a pay raise and then your health insurance goes up more than what the pay raise was. So you're actually losing money every year. So we're trying to hopefully get, by the time our health care goes up with the pay increase, hopefully we're getting a little bit of maybe 2% or 3% if we were able to get this 5.1.
When you talk about comparisons to the private sector, So mm-hmm. somebody in the private sector that does like finance, accounting, similar to DFAS, what mm-hmm. is the difference there in pay? Do you have a percentage, a dollar figure that you can share with me?
I'm not 100% sure. From what I understand, they're about 16% higher than what we are, 17% depending on the positions. Of course, our positions are different than private sector's positions, so they may see it as a different dollar value. Our accountants work with the federal accounting system, where industry and private sector, their accountants are valued at a higher rate than our federal sector. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at probably about anywhere 16. I wouldn't go more. I don't think it would be more than 20% more increase. But again, I'm not 100% sure on the numbers for that.
Okay, getting back to the pay raise that's proposed here, any timetable on that? I know you're hoping for something here, especially close to that 5% figure.
Mm-hmm.
With everything that's going on, I know Biden's got a lot on his plate right now. Where are we with all of that?
Well, we're looking very good. Like I said, the man in the White House is looking at 4.7. He's kind of, his aides have told our people at AFGE National that he's comfortable with the 4.7. Again, we will not know that until the bill, how it goes onto the floor. But he's looking at a 4.7. Hopefully we'll know something by 1st of January on what's going to happen. Again, we have to get through the fiscal year, and anything can happen between now and September 30th. So that's what we're hoping for. And even at 4.7, that's even better than what we had at the last administration.
Right. But still, you got a long wait period here. That's still a long haul. Yeah, no doubt. Lori, I got to take a quick break here. Lori Glicker joining us on our live line, and she is with AFGE Local 3283 in Cleveland, Ohio, based in the federal building. And they handle the DFAS workers. That's the Defense, Finance, and Accounting Agency. Over 700 members. Later in the show, we're going to check in with the sprinkling fitters in the city of Chicago. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Lori Glicker on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees. This would be Local 3283, based in Cleveland, Ohio. 702 members. All right. Lori, talk to me about these recommendations, and I guess they're moving forward with these recommendations to close a number of VA facilities. And this is a part of a part of a national push here. I remember talking to one of the members of your union on this previously. If you go back to March, the Department of Veteran Affairs submitted a set of recommendations to what's called the Asset Infrastructure Review Commission, or AIR Commission, that would result in a vast privatization of veterans' health care. And how do they do that? They close hundreds of clinics, at least three entire medical centers. So this is a scary scenario here, and one of them is in the state of Ohio. So, Lori, what's the latest on this right now?
Right now, Chillicothe is undergoing, and I consider it an attack. This is my own opinion, an attack against that VA facility. People who have gone to look at the facility, the commission, AFGE, the building may look old, but when you walk through the doors, the facility has all new equipment, all new beds. It is in spit spot shape, but again, it's sitting on prime land, and they are looking at closing that facility, where it's going to displace a lot of veterans who suffer from dementia, Alzheimer's. They have part of that facility houses these veterans, and they are looking at replacing or resending them to Dayton, Columbus, other facilities where they will not be any closer to their loved ones during their time. This is a vast concern of these closing of these buildings, but Chillicothe is the one in Ohio where they are just attacking them to get that closed. And even though it's not going to be right now this year, you are looking at the near future for these veterans, where they will have to go for their medical care to Dayton. And they are not used to that and may not have the facilities or the transportation with their family members to get to that facility for their treatment.
Now, is there any pushback on this, or is this a done deal right now? Is this for sure going to close?
We are there. AFG has mounted a national attack against this commission because they are asking that it be reconsidered for not closing. Right now, it's probably at about an 80% done deal that this Chillicothe location will be closed. But AFG is doing everything in their power to try and bring attention to this situation. They're holding rallies down there. They're asking for constant meetings to re-review the facility so that they do not close. But they are pretty much almost a done deal of closing, and that is affecting a lot of veterans and their treatment and their long care plans of being in facilities, especially with dementia and Alzheimer's.
You know what's really sad about this? We did a show on this a couple of months ago, and from what I gathered in that show, the criteria that they're using to close these facilities and medical centers is out of date. They're using old data, and it has not been updated. That's a sad part about this. And think about the displacement here. Do you have any numbers on how many vets are being treated there? And then the staff, which is, you know, represented by the union. What, any numbers on that, Lori?
No, from what I do not have the numbers specifically for Chillicothe, but what I understand is that this is going to affect almost 50,000 VA workers on these base closures these facility closures, over 80 facilities. You're looking at 50,000 employees. They're using the records from pre-pandemic, you know, the real estate, the criteria they use, but they're not going in and reevaluating, and that's what we are bringing to the senator's attention, is you need to come in and take a look at all these facilities and the real estate value, what is the cost going to be to closing these facilities and then opening up new facilities or just closing them all together.
Mm-hmm. So right now they want to level it and then put some new buildings up there, apartments, office buildings. What is it?
It's going to be made more for commercial use by federal use, and that there's, you know, selling the land and making whatever profit they consider, and opening up other facilities, or again, not opening up any facilities and just sending them to private, to contractors for their medical care.
Yeah. And this is part of a push that's been going on for years. I mean, there's been so many that want to privatize healthcare for veterans, and that is the wrong way to go. I mean, the veterans that get served by the VA, they like what's at the VA, believe me. And there's so many people that said, thank God I have the VA. I can go there and get the services that I need, the healthcare that I need. And now they got to go, my gosh, miles away, hundreds of miles away in some cases if they decide to close that. And you said that there's an 80% chance right now that that facility in Chillicothe, Ohio, is going to go down. That's sad. That's sad. AFGE.org is the website. Are all the locals, like your local 3283, banding together to be a voice on this issue then?
Absolutely. We are trying to draw attention and add support to the VA. That is why I am kind of putting the push in today to include them into our conversation, is because people have to be aware of what's changing. Our medical staff that works with the VA, majority of them are veterans themselves, so they understand these veterans' needs and what they've gone through to serve our country. So their quality of care, they take very personally. And when you're telling them that they're going to go to a private contractor, to someone who may not understand what a veteran has gone through, what they've seen, what they've done, what they've had to do for our country, and not show the empathy that they need along with the care they need, it's very distressing to the federal employee, because you're watching this and you're like, you're standing on the side helpless.
Right.
To help these veterans who've gone through so much.
Very unfortunate situation and a sad one. And Lori, I thank you for bringing us up to speed on the situation with the VA. And please forward any information that you can, that you get on this. Hopefully that 20% can grow here and we could change the dynamics on this situation and keep that facility alive. Lori Glicker, Executive Vice President of AFGE Local 3283, representing 702 members at the Defense Finance and Accounting Service. Lori, stay strong, stay in touch. Thanks for joining us today, okay?
Thank you, Flash, and you have a wonderful day now.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to the city of Chicago and check in with the sprinkler fitters. That would be Local 281 on behalf of the United Association.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
Now, back to America's workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. In fact, we'll be checking in with Pat Gallagher on behalf of the Labor Federation tomorrow. Right now, though, let's go to Chicago, Illinois. And joining us on our live line is Mr. William Hinks. And he is a vice president and organizer for the Sprinkler Fitters, which is affiliated, of course, with the United Association, and that would be Local 281. The website is sprinklerfitterchicago.org. Mr. Hinks, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, my brother?
I am doing great, Ed. It's great to be with you, sir.
See, you come from a very strong union family. Your dad's retired from 281. Your uncle retired. Is your cousin still working at 281 as a sprinkler fitter?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My cousin is still an active member working in the field. Great guy. Couldn't be more proud of him.
Good, good, good. How many members in that local, by the way?
Roughly, we have about 1,000 active working members, just over about 1,400. I believe it's 1,414 total members.
Good. Good, good, good. I was reading earlier, too. You spent some time in Wisconsin in the Scott Walker days. 13 nights sleeping in the Capitol? Wow.
Yes, sir. It was one of the most impactful moments in my life. I know it definitely shaped a lot of my beliefs and kind of the core of who I am and kind of what I believe nowadays.
That got a lot of national attention, and unfortunately, a lot of states followed Walker's lead. Some successful, some did not. They tried to carry it in the state of Ohio, and there was a rebellion here against the governor. But, it's too bad, and I know the current governor is trying to unwind some of that. But let's talk about 281 here and organize. How are we doing with organizing? I want to get into that. Let's start there.
We are doing great on the organizing front. We really began putting a heavy emphasis on it going back about 4 to 5 years ago. And since that point, we have moved in a direction that has just been extremely positive for our local and for the industry as a whole in the Chicagoland area. Workers understand here. The days of, maybe having somebody come and yell at you or something like that, those are gone. They understand that we're here to help and fight for them. And it's really done a good thing here for the city of Chicago and for the surrounding suburbs.
So, William, what did you do? It sounds like you changed the game plan a little bit or upped it a little bit 4 to 5 years ago. Can you be specific?
Yeah, certainly. So. What we did is we put the emphasis on the women and men that do work in this important industry. It wasn't so much the top-down approach. It was about the bottom-up, talking to the women and men that do this work and, really just relating to them on the level of we have more in common than we do that separates us. And mm-hmm. When we sit down and we talk, we all want the same things. We want good health care. We want to be able to send our kids to school. We want to be able to have time with our families on the weekends. And those things are achieved when you have a say in your workplace. And when you start educating men and women about what they can achieve by standing together, everybody tends to resonate towards that. You just got to talk about the basics, and that's what we as a local union here in Chicago started to do with not just myself, but I got to take my hat off to every single rank and file member with our local union. You know, our business manager, Thomas M. Collins, prior to him, Dennis Fleming. I mean, we really went from, you know, every rank and file member to the top of our leadership. And we've changed the approach, and workers understand that we're here for them now.
Good. It's all about empowering workers. How are we doing with the legislature there? I mean, Chicago, Illinois, union friendly for the most part, right? Or you can maybe tell me differently.
Yes, sir. For the most part, we've done pretty well on our legislative efforts. We recently had some big wins here in the state of Illinois where we wanted to, I guess, increase you know, the saving lives of property through enforcement and accountability. And through doing that is what we did is we increased the certification level that's required for inspections and testing. It used to be that in order to perform inspection and testing on life safety systems here, fire sprinkler systems, that you had to either be a graduate of a Department of Labor certified sprinkler fitter apprenticeship program, or that you had to have something called a NISET level 2 in the inspections and testing of water-based systems. That has since been raised coming at the end of the year here to a NISET level 3 requirement, which brings it a little bit closer to, you know, the standard set forth in a 5-year apprenticeship program, but it still does not compare because there's no hands-on, there's no practical portion of it. You know, so we did achieve that goal, and we got a lot more work to do, and we're going to be proactive to try and achieve some more positive changes.
Well, let's talk about what work needs to be done. I was reading earlier there's no installation licensing for sprinkler fitters in the state of Illinois. And I know about this issue because we've done several shows on that. I think there's like 5 states, New York included, that are in that category. There's 45 others that seem to be doing the right thing. So what's the problem there, William? Why are we behind on this?
Yes, sir. I don't know really where that came from and why it wasn't something that was put into the licensing act to begin with. But now it's kind of that uphill fight of just educating elected officials, educating the public. You know, there's certainly work to do there, but it is, as you point out, a rather scary situation where you have individuals putting systems in where they may not have had a single day of training. Hey, let's pick you up and go out there and let's go put in a life safety system in a property somewhere in the state of Illinois. That's a dangerous precedent to be setting, and that's something in the future that the you know, Illinois Pipe Trades and, you know, the Sprinkler Fitters Local 281, Sprinkler Fitters Local 268, and our brothers with Local 669 will certainly be working on to try and address and educate the public about, and hopefully we can remedy that deficiency there.
And when they are installed on the cheap, there's got to be some data on this, especially if there's a fire that breaks out. They have to find out, you know, who put in the sprinkler system in that, you know, building or a school or something of that nature. Isn't that part of your campaign to turn this around? Is that working in the right direction?
It really is. What we've seen is, you know, another big part of the organizing efforts has been when we're talking to women and men that work at some of our non-signatory contractors, you know, we're building information and we're seeing some of the stuff that goes on out there with companies that that don't have the rigorous training programs that we go through. And we've been identifying some of this work that is frankly, it's subpar to say the least. And what we've done is we've documented that work, and we have filed the necessary complaints with the Illinois Office of State Fire Marshal to try and hold these bad actors accountable. Beyond that, we've not only the Illinois Office of State Fire Marshal, but we've been bringing this to the attention of the local authorities having jurisdiction. But again, that comes with a lot of education, and that's been a really big point of emphasis for us, is educating our fire officials when we come across these poorly and improperly installed systems.
Yeah, I would imagine the fire department would speak loudly on this. Well, let's call them out here. That's what this show's all about. I'm reading Cintas Fire Protection, Spillane Fire Protection, and American Backflow Fire Protection. And from what I'm reading, there's been a number of unfair labor practice charges filed against these companies. Is that right?
Yes, sir. In two of those, beginning with the Cintas Fire Protection, we had an organizing campaign there that really picked up a lot of momentum, a lot of steam. Those women and men that were working there, they had the election won. They had majority representation, and Cintas did what big anti-union employers do, and they hired some union busters to come in and start trying to influence and impact those workers, and they did. But that resulted in a lot of unfair labor practice charges, and subsequently had to result in, the notice postings. It resulted in back pay. I believe close to about $30,000 in back pay, for unlawfully, provided raises to certain workers while withholding them from others. So that was the situation with Cintas, and the American Backflow situation, that is ongoing as we speak, Ed.
Mm-hmm. Cintas has a horrible labor history. I know they're involved in the work environment. They do a lot of uniforms for people.
Yes.
And they've got violation after violation after violation. It's really, really sad. All right, let's try to end on a positive note here. What's the game? How's the workload? And you got a lot of members right now that are working. What's the projection down the road?
Yes, sir. Projection is looking great. The work is there. The membership is enthusiastic. We are growing. Currently, we have about 150 apprentices in our program. That program is headed up by our director of training and president, Brian LaRoche, with two of our instructors, Don Ott and Alan Crawford, second to none. But they are firing on all cylinders with that apprenticeship program. We're looking for some growth here, starting some new apprentices in the near future. It's really positive. We got some big things moving here. We continue to push in a positive direction, and we really couldn't be happier with the direction of things. And we're organizing. And we want workers. If you are not represented, we want you calling us here at Local 281, and we're going to help you in the way you want to be helped. That's what we're about, and that's what we believe in.
William, this is such an honorable profession. I thank you for coming to the show today. William Hinks, who is an organizer and vice president for the Sprinkler Fitters out of Chicago, that would be Local 281, affiliated with the United Association. SprinklerFitterChicago.org is the website, SprinklerFitterChicago.org. Will you take care? Great job today. Please stay in touch with us down the road, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you for your time, sir.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the Nation and the North Coast Labor Federation. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.